This is an interview with Mrs. R. R. Reynolds, lifelong member of the ranching communities of Alfred and Orange Grove, Texas. Mrs. Reynolds' family came to this area in the 1850s. This recording will relate some of the past experiences and some of her views of ranch life in South Texas. The interview is being conducted by Lamar Joseph Conrad, April the 2nd, 1974, Reynolds Ranch Home.
I'll tell you a little bit about what my mother told me that had happened when one of her children. The raids were going on. Mexicans would come in, and one afternoon, kind of late, a man and his wife, and her face was bleeding very badly. Her mouth was swollen. They rushed up to my grandfather's place and said, "Hide us, the bandits had been after us." And they had told the bandits where a water hole was, and they tied them and told them that if they had told them the wrong place where they could get fresh water, that they would be killed when they came back. So she leaned over and chewed the rope in two that her husband was tied with, and he untied her finally. But in chewing, her mouth was damaged, hurt so badly, her lips, that she was bleeding very badly. They spent the night with my folks, and but they never did. My folks never did hear anything more from the bandits. And the schoolhouse was about the first school along my mother's time was about a mile and a half from their home. And they used to walk to school, quite different from the way all the children do this day and time.
Sure.
But sometimes they rode horseback, but most of the time they walked. And since my mother was one of the older girls, she had to look after the younger children. And one day they were coming home, and an uncle of ours whose pasture they had to go through had some wild horses. And they started after the children. So my mother told them to go on ahead, and she lay down on the ground and kicked her heels up to frighten the horses away. Then when the horses were frightened away, she started in and tried to go and make sure that the children wouldn't run into any snakes. So one bush that they were going to hide behind, she hollered to the children, "Don't stop there, there's a big snake." And those are some of the trials and tribulations that they had. And although they had money where they could have bought things, my mother said they invented for rocking chairs, they would find jaws of cattle and then put boards on them, and that was their rocking chair. And to do any shopping, they had to go 40 miles to Corpus Christi. And most of the ministers came out either from San Antonio, which was about 127 miles, or from Corpus Christi. And they usually held services in my grandfather's dining room. And the community all gathered, and these were Episcopal services. I believe that's all. One interesting thing that I thought my mother told was about one of my uncle's mothers. She died during a time that was very cold and raining, and in those days, of course, the 40 miles was quite a ways because they went in wagons and buggies. And so she was buried on the ranch, which was kind of in rocky soil. And later, quite a number of years later, her body was moved to Corpus. And at the time it was moved, it was very, very heavy. And my mother said that they always had wished that they had opened the casket to have seen, because if her body had petrified, because there had been petrified pieces of wood and all found in that section of the country. Stop. Road came through Alfred in 1889, and my grandfather wanted the place named for Mr. Driscoll, the station, because Robert Driscoll was a very dear friend of his. So the town was named Driscoll. And it stayed that way until about 1904 or 1905, when the railroad went through Mr. Robert Driscoll's Senior's land near Kingsville, and then he wanted the stop named Driscoll in his land. So the railroad company asked the heirs of my grandfather if they would name the town, like to name the town of Driscoll over again, because Mr. Driscoll wanted that name for his own town. So they named it after my grandfather's youngest son, which was Alfred Wright. Mr. Wright built his home, that's my grandfather, built his home about 1872. When the railroad had come through in 1887, he gave them 20 acres of 20 acres of land for shipping pens, depot, and section houses. There were two section houses, and that had two houses under the same roof. And then there was the two-story section foreman's home, and then there was a house that was built directly on the railroad track for the section hands, and for the hand cars, and all. Mr. Wright, my grandfather, was the postmaster until his death in 1903, caused by the burning of his home. He was out of the house and remembered the post office money he had in the house and went back to get it, and was badly burned and died from the shock. The first Episcopal services had been held in the county, had been held there in 1873 in his dining room. Bishops came out of San Antonio, and ministers came from Corpus Christi and San Antonio for services. After the death of Mr. Wright, the heirs gave the homestead for an Episcopal church, St. Thomas Church. In this church were held services by the Methodists, the Baptists, the Presbyterian, and the Episcopalians. This end of the county was also visited by a Roman Catholic priest, Father Quigg, from San Patricia, and he became friends of all the ranchers. The first school was about a mile from Alfred on the Robert Adams Ranch. Mr. Adams had a governess for his children, but the Ammons and the Adamses and the Wright children went to school as early as 1873 in this first schoolhouse. Then later, they all went to Goliad College. Mr. Sutherland was a teacher at Alfred for A good many years, the Reynolds children also went to Goliad College. In later years, the school was in the town site of Alfred, and then, in 1913, a brick schoolhouse was built over the ground where the wool shed had once stood at my grandfather's. Alfred was the largest shipping point along the railroad because ranchers from as far up as Clay, Judge, West, and the large ranches for about 50 miles or so west of Alfred drove their cattle here to be shipped to market and to Grasses in Kansas before going on to market. There was a gin, seven houses, and at one time as many as three stores. Mr. T.C. Wright had four sons and five daughters. William T., John E., Thomas Kittle, taking a load of cattle to Kansas. Alfred A., Mrs. Sina Musset, Caroline E. McCoy, Edith Simmons, Bessie Brooks Ballinger, and Mamie Dura. Mr. Ammon had two sons and two daughters, John and Robert, and Mrs. Bessie Price and Mrs. Josie Shealy. Mr. Adams had five sons and three daughters, Op, Ed, June, James, Jim, Bernard, and Kate Collins, Zadie Hobbs, and Gussie Mercer. These men have many grandchildren around in Jim Wells County. Between Alfred and Alice was another switch, was named for Mr. Dunn's wife. It was Mary. There, shipping pens, two, but the railroad did away with these as the shipping fell off. There was a rural mill delivery out of Casablanca and Tulare County back in 1905. As I rode with the mailman out to an uncle in Live Oak County. That was James McCoy. He was from St. Louis. He had come down to Texas to visit his cousin, Mrs. Richard King. He used to come over to Alfred and pick my mother and some of the girls up and take them back to the King Ranch, La Puerta, at Aladulce. My uncles took me on to Woody Museum one time and said, you see that old stagecoach? He said, your father did most of his courting of your mother in that stagecoach. It was the stagecoach that the La Puerta Ranch used in coming from Mayo at Alfred and to meet the train when any of their guests were coming in.
This was the old original King Ranch area, correct?
Stop it. This was the La Puerta Ranch that was given to Richard King Sr. when he married. And this Mrs. Pearl Ashbrook of St. Louis. And it was his place all his life. And of course his father, Captain King, had given it to him as a wedding present.
I see. Well, there quite an amount of acreage in with it, pretty large ranch.
Oh yes, because there's 11,000, I think, now.
Seeing now that we're talking about ranches, you live on one of the oldest ranches around the area. Could you tell us a little bit about this one?
Well, it was called Ventana Ranch for the reason of a tree that was on the Aladulce Creek that could be seen for miles and miles. Some say it could be seen as far as 50 miles, because as a child, there was not the only trees that could be seen were very, very few other than what were on the creek. It was either the ranchers kept it burned off, or they, of course, we did have a lot of train fires, you know, because fires started by the train.
Well, perhaps hurricanes damaged them too.
Yes. And it was the branches of this tree formed windows most any way you looked at the tree. And so it was called ventana, because that is window in Spanish. And it was also used by surveyors as a burying tree. And so the name was, the ranch was named Ventana. And as along the railroad track, when the train went through the ranch, Mr. Reynolds built shipping pens, and they were paid, he was paid $1 car for every car that was shipped out of those shipping pens by the railroad until the pens were paid for, and he gave the land to the railroad company. So, but now the pins have been taken down and the switch has been taken off, as most of the cattle are trucked to market. And the switch at one time was just south of the Alladoosie Creek. Mr. George Reynolds, Mr. Reynolds' oldest son, lived just east of the railroad track there on the Alladoosie Creek. And he moved, Grandpa Reynolds was also named George. He moved to this country in 1863. And he had a very large number of acres here in this place. And in 1873, he built an old caliche block house that was built by some Spaniards that came in to shear the sheep. And he said, let me go back and get some men that build block houses in Mexico and bring them back here and build you a house that will last for four generations. And so he did, this Mexican man did. And along with the house was built a one-room schoolhouse, because Mr. Reynolds had a governess for his children, since school was quite a distance away. And he had six boys and two girls, George J., Harry, Joe, John, Frank, and Mr. Charlie, and Mrs. Emma Foster, and Mrs. Mary Perkins. He died in 1898, and his estate was divided. Mrs. Perkins got the old home and sold it for property and quarrel. But Joe Reynolds traded a ranch he had in Duval County to the man that had bought it from Mrs. Perkins, and I understand that he gave 2 acres of his Duval County ranch for 1 acre of this ranch. And when he bought this ranch back, he had, it was around 10,000 acres.
This is all part of the old
George got 5,000, and Gertrude got 5,000.
I know it was quite large. This was all part of the old Ventana Ranch, right?
Yes, and this is the Ventana headquarters, and they it had two underground wells for water, and was built down on the Aldusi Creek, and the creek was navigable up to the back here for many, many years. And then in 1885, Mr. Wells formed a family cemetery, and it was fenced off, and it is still being used by the family. And
Sam, this cemetery is right up behind the house.
Yes.
I've attended several funerals here.
Yes.
I attended your husband's funeral at this one.
Mm-hmm. And there were about 16 houses with about two room wood houses on this place for the Mexicans to live in. And in a circle out here. And but there are not any of them here anymore. And
how about this home itself that we're in right now? This is part of the old building.
This is the room we're sitting in right now was the dining room. And this archway was much, much smaller, and that was a front hall.
Sort of entrance hall?
Yes, an entrance hall. And then it had a living room on one side and Mr. Reynolds' bedroom and all on the other, and a big kitchen, 16 by 16. And it had three big fireplaces in it, and this fireplace in this room is a very efficient fireplace. It heats this whole room, which is 16 by, I think, 32 or...
Oh, it's a large room. And it certainly was nice at Christmas when we were out here at the Christmas party, and you had that big fire roaring in here, and it was cold and freezing outside that night.
And there was something I wanted to tell. Because the house has been changed on the outside. The front doesn't look like it did when I used to visit here as a little girl. But, I never once dreamed that I would be living in this house as a Mrs. Reynolds when I used to visit here. But my husband and I felt very fortunate in buying it, and it held sentimental feelings to me because I love the Mr. Joe and Miss Nanny that lived here and had bought it back into the Reynolds family. And my sentimental feelings, along with my husband's sentimental feelings, were made us buy the ranch.
Buy the ranch
back. And he enjoyed just fixing it, because it did have to have quite a bit of repair.
Well, just looking at it, you've done a lot. It's a beautiful place. I can remember Dad telling me, that he had come out here years ago. He and mother. I'm sitting here right now admiring these chandeliers with a little blue bell.
Well, this is that I put in about 5 years ago.
They sure are pretty.
And I really wanted to get something a little bit more like the period in which it was built. But, of course, the part of the house had been changed, and so when I saw those, I couldn't resist them.
They're beautiful. They have that Holland print or whatever, that blue and white, and I see you have the blue and white dishes over the fireplace.
Now, those were my mother's wedding presents, those three plates were, and then the platters was the turkey platter that had held many a wonderful turkey on our table at Alfred, and then the other one, bacon and eggs and fried chicken, and that very middle is over 100 years old. That's the blue, what is that?
Onion pattern?
No.
Blue onion?
No, it's yellow. Anyway, it was sent to me by one of the Reynolds' wives in England, and it had been in her grandmother's set of wedding dishes, and it is about 105 years old, because it was to be 100 years old the year after she sent it to me.
How about that? Well, now, the Reynolds, as you mentioned, England, they did come here from England.
Oh, yes.
I noticed the house and everything seems to be English style.
They came from England. And I visited in England, and they showed me, said that, took me out to a graveyard and said that here's the tombstone that Uncle George built for his father's grave.
You really have an interesting place here. I'll tell you, could we get down the line now a little more to not in Jim Ross County, a little farther towards, say, Sandia, and see what we can come up with there, and then we'll try to get back to Orangeville and a few more of the places.
You see, this was this man was Mr. Reynolds's Grandpa Reynolds was their uncle, their father, I think it was, or else it was their great, he was their great uncle. And they said, we have the receipt of where he sent us the money to, you know, buy that.
By the stone?
By the stone. You know, when I went. That's right. They were just...
the record keepers, weren't
they? Yes.
I'm sure
were. All right. I think that... I tried on Grandpa Wright and a little bit on... I tried on Grandpa Wright not to follow, read what I said. I tried to say it separate.
Cindy, let's talk a little bit about Sandia, Texas now. This is right near Orangeville. What could you tell us about this?
Sandia is quite near the Nueces River, end of the county. And Sandia was named for watermelon. That's the Spanish name. Mr. Wallace Wade was planting watermelons up the road from Casablanca. This Casablanca was a railroad stop on the Sandia wasn't there, but Casablanca was one of the old first stops when the railroad came through. And so, since the town, they found that the sandy loam was so good around Sandia and all, they in hauling in watermelons and things, they just made a railroad stop there and called it Sandia. Mr. Wade was the first to grow melons, and due to the sandy loam, as I said before, it became a vegetable center in this end of the county. They did not have to irrigate this at all. And in later years, a lot of vegetable farms had been bought up and leased by the Kamali Jersey Ranch, which is the largest Jersey herd in the world. The Canales came to Sandia in 1907. Sandia had a bank as early as 1912, which is still running. This bank helped many a young farmer in the northern part of the county and the counties adjacent to us. Mr. J.H. Gallagher was recorded as the first president of the bank. Kenny Slavitt was a leader and president for many, many years. History will probably record the bank, Sandia Bank, as the oldest bank in Jim Wells County. The Methodists built the first church in Sandia, but in later years the Baptists have replaced the Methodists, and the building was moved to AMI College in Kingsville for a Wesleyan center. To the northwest of Sandia, a high hill overlooking the Nueces River, Mr. John Wade built a home in 1876 and lived with his two sons and three daughters, Wallace, John, Mrs. Pate McNeil, Maggie, Miss Maggie, and Mrs. Rosa Newberry, Mrs. Ernest Miller. When the railroad came through in 1887, Mr. Wade gave the land for the depot and shipping pens at Wade City, and the Wades moved down to the railroad about 1892. This was Wade City, and of course it is much older than Sandia, and was about 2 miles south of Sandia on the railroad. There was a school and a store and a hotel, a gym, and when the post office was put in, the name had to be changed, as there was already a Wade, a Wadeville, a John, a Johnville, so the town was called Casablanca, after the Casablanca Fort. And the Casablanca land grant on which the Wade Ranch was a part. Drummers made it a point to make Casablanca for a meal, or spend the night there, as Mrs. Pate McNeil was such a wonderful cook, they wanted to eat with her. She and her husband ran the hotel. Salesmen were called drummers in those days. Miss Maggie had four sons, Wade, Dr. Scott, Bill, and Tom McNeil, who was living in the home that was built in 1902. This is just a fourth of a mile south of the town of Casablanca. She also had a daughter, Mrs. C.C. Cox. Mr. John Wade died in 1898. And the state was settled about 2 years later. The town of Casablanca began to fade as the Wade family began to move to their property and the buildings were moved away. Mr. Wallace Wade married in 1894, and he and Mrs. Wade lived on the high hill overlooking the Nueces River in the old house built in 1876 until about 1912, when they built a beautiful two-story home where Mrs. Wallace Wade lived until recent.
Right. And this home is still there. This is the large two-story southern mansion on the hill up there.
And you see, she also connected it afterwards. In later years, she was connected the two houses, the old John Wade home, which was built years ago by a large living room, and quite a number of the lots and all in Casablanca are still owned by different people.
Right.
And
that's kind of odd.
It is.
It really is.
And now we've, that's about all. Because I could tell quite a number of tales, I guess, about those. For instance, on the road, I said the old Casablanca fort here, where when my mother was a little girl, her aunt lived right close to the fort. And one real rainy, blustery night when her husband was gone, why, she thought she saw a man's face at the window, but she wouldn't say anything because she was afraid that she'd frighten the children. So she just kept walking in front of a fire and singing. And so she didn't want them to think that she had seen him. And so the next morning, though, they heard the dogs barking down close to the fort, the ruins of the fort.
Uh-huh.
And so they went down there, and in a square where she had always put her sick turkeys, a wagon had backed up to it in the night, and there was a great big deep hole, and the dogs were after a polecat that had gotten into the hole, and then it was signs or something had been taken out of that hole. So about 2 weeks before that, there had been a barbecue at this aunt's, my mother's aunt's place,
mm-hmm.
and men were all sitting around on these rocks, and they said, "I just wonder if there isn't a treasure buried here." Says, "Let's all of us dig," but none of them dug.
Right. Well, I have heard tales about the old Casablanca area. There's many people who have dug for gold out there.
Yeah.
As a matter of fact, where the original old Casablanca home was, they destroyed the house with a bulldozer a few years ago, and trying to find the gold, and then they built a new home on top of it.
Indeed.
Some attorney from Alice did this. Well, could you come down the line a little further back this way now and tell us a little something about Orange Grove, perhaps?
Well, Orange Grove, you might say, is a very young town. George J. Wells, who was the oldest son of grandfather George Wells, began selling off his land that was in 1908, and it was all surveyed, and Orange Grove was laid out.
Uh-huh.
And when Orange Grove was laid out,
who was the man that originally laid the town out? Wasn't his name Starkey? I believe it was Starkey.
And then Disbrow, I think.
Or Disbrow.
Disbrow.
Disbrow
started the surveying.
Right.
And Mr. George Wells he lived out on Valladolid Creek. And he had three daughters. And Mrs. Wilson, Mrs. Ryan, Harriet, and Mrs. Ryan. And they all bought land and moved into Orange Grove where they raised their families. And they also died in Orange Grove and are buried in the cemetery that their father, George J. Wells, gave to the sons of Herman. And the history of Orange Grove is fairly new, and since I was gone along during that time, I am going to leave that for the present generation to write. But the Orange Grove Mercantile was built in 1912,
mm-hmm.
and there was a little feed store And since Orange Grove was only 6 miles from Alfred, and Alice was 12, my mother, after school, my mother would have a buckboard all hitched up and a lunch ready, and we would come over to Orange Grove and get over here before the stores closed and buy chicken feed and feed for the cows and feed for the horses and load up the buckboard, and then we'd go back almost to the Aladusi Creek, and there was a little place on Mr. Reynolds's land that held water all the time, and it was a nice little island affair, and we'd stake the horses there, and on moonlight nights, had my mother had gathered up a bunch of the young folks in Alfred, and we'd come over there and have a picnic supper.
Could you tell me, were there many houses around the town at this time, or buildings, or anything?
No, I don't even remember that Anglicans were there when old Wetzloff's building was there.
What year was this approximately, the 19...
Well, I really don't know. I can't tell you.
I think the town really started to boom a little later than that. I know my grandparents, the J.A. Newmans, they came in there in 1919.
Yes.
And they started all kind of businesses on the main street. Newmans were these businesses, and
mm-hmm.
I think this was the time when it really began building up.
Yes.
Where it wasn't earlier.
I don't think, as I remember, we passed this little table of filler that had a step on it, and that was where, if you came on the train, you told them you wanted to get off at Orange Grove, and they'd stop, and you'd get off at that, off on this little teeny weeny platform that didn't seem to me to be any more than about 9 by 9.
Yeah.
And it was right down there close to where Anglican's first hardware office was.
Well, seeing you say you don't know too much more about Orange Grove, could you tell us, are there any old wise tales or ghost stories or anything around the ranch out here that you could mention to us? Anything you'd like to say something about in that line?
Well, when I was a little girl, our friend Paris was at the house one day, and he was telling about how he had lost a animal one time, and every time he rode home late, it was kind of bad weather, he'd see this black animal running ahead of him, and he'd try to catch it, and said it would always disappear in a certain bush. And he couldn't, but he never could catch it. It disappeared, he didn't know where it went. He looked in the bush and he couldn't find anything. But after this happening, maybe 4 or 5 times, he decided he was going to really hunt it.
Yeah.
And so he found a black hide, just like the animal that he had been chasing, and it had a lot of money.
This was a lot out here on the ranch, is that right?
Well, I don't know just exactly where it was, but he owned property over he owned property in Jim Wells County,
yes,
but south of Uncle Willie's property.
Uh-huh.
And then Mrs. Reynolds would tell, I think she was trying to scare me soon after I married, and she'd tell me about ghost stories, how they see these phantoms floating up one of the roads that was covered with mesquite trees and all, and just a kind of a narrow path after the rain. And I told her, well, I guess that was just the moisture floating around.
What was that, right out here in this area?
No, that was over at the old, at the Miller Ranch.
I see. Well, maybe she was trying to frighten you into staying home or something.
Don't know.
Well, what else could you tell us about?
And over, now the Baptists, there used to be a lake over behind my grandfather's home in Alfred, because it was burned. And this little Episcopal church was built on the ground that my grandfather's dining room stood on. And behind the house had been was a lake. It wasn't a very deep lake, but the Baptists used to use that lake as to baptize and people when they joined the Baptist Church.
That was near Alfred, right?
That was right behind Alfred, yes.
All these areas that we're talking about, they're all sort of joined together.
Yes.
Behind by large ranches, Sandia, Arkville, mm-hmm. Alfred, Casablanca,
yes.
They're all, for a history sake and all this, they all put right in one area. They're all in a district, right?
Yes. In Jones County.
Right. Are there any ghost tales connected with the old house down here or anything?
Not that I know of. I know that several times the old window at the cemetery, when it's turned on, it makes a terrible noise and people are like, "What's that?" And I say, "Well, it's just the windmill." And of course, the peacocks make plenty of noise.
How many people are buried out here in the cemetery right behind the house?
22.
22.
Really, I guess it's 23 because there's one grave that isn't, we don't know just where it is.
Are all of these relatives, or were a few of them hired hands also?
No, there was one, they're all of them related, most of them are all relatives.
Mm-hmm.
Or they were Reynolds girls. But there is one man that was called Uncle Ned, and his last name was Taylor, and he had come from England with Grandfather Reynolds, and he worked here on the ranch.
Was he a white man?
Yes, he was a white man, and he died, and he was buried by, they couldn't get a minister, and so Mr. Joseph Annam, who had come, he was one of the early settlers that had come over from England too. He was a cabinet maker, and he came by and made the casket, and then he read the burial services, and he was one of the first that was buried out here in the cemetery. He had, in his diary, he says about coming over and making. First he came, mentioned about coming over and seeing Uncle Ned, and then the next, he said, in the next page, he said, Mr. Reynolds sent for me to come over, but Uncle Ned passed away. And he said, I'm to go over and make his casket and then to bury him.
This diary you're speaking about, is this still in the hands of the Reynolds family?
No, it is not. It is a diary of Mr. Joseph Annam, and it's in the Lavitama Library in Corpus.
I see.
In microfilm.
Right.
And Miss Josephine Price has the original.
What about...
And in there, he also tells, which I think is very interesting, and we found plaster on this house. That the men that worked with plaster said that they had never seen a composition like it. But Uncle Willie had told me that in making this place, they had got him brought down the Alabama Creek,
mm-hmm.
and burned it to make the lime, and it was that lime that they used in making the plaster. And in Mr. Ammon's diary, he mentions about going, coming over with some Mexicans to get the certain kind of rock out of the Alabama Creek to make lime out of it to line the underground cisterns with.
Did the early ranch out here, did they have slaves on it or servants? I know they had.
They had Mexican families.
I see. How about Negro families? Did they have any of these out here?
I don't think there were any Negro families out here, although there was one family of Negroes that was out in this area over towards La Baja and then there.
Then the people that worked out here, they served more or less as servants rather than as slaves.
Mm-hmm.
They were paid and lived on the
ranch. Oh, yes. They were paid and lived on the ranch.
Right.
My day, when I was a young girl, we ran cattle. We nearly always, when we worked the cattle, they always had a camp cook because they had so many men gathering the cattle. And so they had a camp cook and a camp wagon. And all of these at Alfred, I mentioned about it being one of the largest shipping points. Well, then maybe there'd be three and four and five, and that largest shipping point was during my day.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, since I was lived there, and I lived there from the time I was 5 years old, which was from 1905.
Mm-hmm.
And the ranchmen would come from all these outlying places, Schaefer Ranch and all those, and they brought their own camp cook and camp wagon.
You keep mentioning all the ranches around here. Years ago, I can remember you telling my mother an old tale about all of y'all going out, you were friends with the people at the King Ranch, and going out and how y'all would go to Mexico or something and get lace or something for the
crop. Oh, that was, I was telling her about, one of the our friends that whose husband had a stagecoach from here down into Laredo, and she said that when they had buses, that they'd take the they'd smuggle lace back with the from Mexico. They'd take all the stuffing out of their buses and stuff it with lace, and then they'd take their petticoats and just baste rows and rows and rows and rows of lace on their petticoats and bring the lace in to the United States that way.
That was one way to get it back, I guess.
Yeah.
Well, then we're getting right down toward the end of the tape, and I'd love to get a lot more information, but could you tell us, I know your husband was instrumental in many activities in this area, you and he worked, could you relate a few of the things that, how you've been in the area and things that y'all have done here?
Well, when they began to put this land in cultivation for fields, Randolph was wholesale gasoline agent, and he'd carry gasoline out to all of these big contractors that were clearing the land. And then after he and I married in 30, we decided to go out to California or the West Coast, and So while out there, we attended a fair and saw Scalene, that was the name of the gas company. They had a combination gas and wood stove. And when I saw it, I turned to Randolph and I said, let's go on back to Texas and take the city to the country people. And he said, yes, that I could deliver 25-gallon bottles of gas to house customers, just like I delivered the gasoline. So we came on back to Texas. As in San Antonio, we stopped and we contacted Hydro Gas, which was forming a company, and he got franchise over several counties. And when we got to Orange Grove, they called us from San Antonio and told us that they needed more capital. And since we didn't want to put in any more capital in it, we told them we didn't want the franchise. And but Charlie Newman, the mother's brother, had gone in with them, and so Randolph for a while worked with him as a salesman. Then we went into business by ourselves. And 25-gallon bottles and had did our own delivering.
Well, I tell you, we've enjoyed the recording, and all I can say is just thank you, because I think we're coming right to the end. Is there anything else you'd like to say in the last couple of words?
No, except that my husband was a big man, and he'd always...